Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, December 14th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the weekend special titled Going Once, Going Twice in Belgium. This is by Jennifer Bailey. Belgium. Though this small village along Illinois 1 between Tilton and Westville has a population of only a few hundred people, it sees at least that many visit each month seeking treasure. Glory Days Auction House stages live auctions at 5:30 p.m. every Friday and 1 p.m. on the second and fourth Sundays of the month. Additional flea markets have also been occurring in warm weather. Doors open early so potential buyers can view the items, said Ron Pruitt of Glory Days Antiques and Uniques. Pruitt said the auctions have been running for a year, as of January, at 3025 Georgetown Road, former site of Priority One LIPA auction. He said visitors are drawn by the wide variety, antiques and collectibles, and you never know what you'll find. Glory Days Antiques and Uniques, owned by Ken Gentrup, has had a store in downtown Danville for about 15 years. It regularly buys assets from estates, and its auction inventories vary each week. We buy estates and we sell them. That's basically how they do it, Pruitt said. We take some consignment, but not a lot because we're so full. We've been full since we got here. He said, since they started, they constantly have people contacting them about purchasing estates, not just in Vermilion County. We've been in Indiana, and we've been all over the place, Pruitt said. He was getting ready recently to move furniture to Florida. It works out. We've been known from here to there in a 50-mile radius or farther, Pruitt said. We've moved stuff from Indianapolis before. Distance doesn't really matter. If it's worth it, we'll come after it, Pruitt said. The estate sales attract the crowds, too, with Pruitt saying the auctions draw an average of a little more than 100 people. It seems to be constant, Pruitt said. Sundays can see a smaller attendance. It's according to what's selling and what's in there, he said. A recent auction had four consignments. There were some holiday items, glassware, and Coca-Cola collectibles. Coins and jewelry are popular items, and tools, furniture, yard equipment, appliances, and other collectibles are frequently on offer. We pride ourselves on keeping a clean auction, Pruitt said. Auctioneers include Martin Lipa and Carrie Lenhart. Pruitt said there are several aspects that attract people to auctions. It's hands-on. It's not like on a computer. This is old school, he said. This is the way it should be. People coming out and meeting other people. You have a good time. We have good food, he added. We try and take care of each and every one of them the best we can. It's kind of like a big family in here, I guess you could say. A lot of regulars attend each auction. We have fun when we do it, too, Pruitt said. You have to come to see it. Before each auction, there are bid exercises, which especially helps newcomers. It's good times. It makes it worthwhile, Pruitt added. The location along Illinois 1, with its heavy traffic, is ideal, he said. Pruitt said in the spring the business will resume its flea markets on the first Saturday of the month. It's a lot of work, he said, but they're trying to get it up and running to give the area something to look forward to. They'll continue as long as they have the participation, he said. Preparations and setup for an auction start on a Monday and don't finish until about Wednesday. And sometimes we're still rolling, Pruitt said. You never know. The building can be stacked packed full with all kinds of items, he said. Pruitt, who's been with Glory Days for about 7 years, has seen a lot of sales. He said the auctions run pretty quickly, too, averaging about 3 hours. And an editor's note regarding Belgium. This is the 7th installment in our 12-story road trip series looking at the people and places along Illinois 1, from Watseka to Paris. Also on the front page, we have a proud to be pinned. And there's a photograph of Parkland College nursing graduate Diana Gutierrez, who poses with Nydia Basilio, who put on her new pin during the graduation ceremony Friday in the gymnasium at the college in Champaign. About 50 students got their pins on Friday. And from the Parkland College, we have a former construction worker finds career shift as nurse. This is by Rob LaCates, Champaign. Following mom's lead and using her as motivation, 36-year-old Ben Joslin graduated from Parkland College's nursing program on Friday. My mom is one of the most generous, caring, and intuitively brilliant people I've ever met, and to follow in her footsteps has been a total honor, Joslin said. In 1994, Sarah Stake completed her work at Parkland while raising a preschooler and a toddler. Joslin had their own challenges, changing careers by returning to school in their mid-30s. I thought I was going to stick out like a sore thumb as a 36-year-old nursing student, Joslin said, and there's quite a few students who are older than me, taking a bit of time to study hard and put themselves on a new career path. Parkland's nursing program prepares students to meet educational requirements for licensing in Illinois and partners with area hospitals and healthcare providers like Carle Foundation Hospital, OSF, and the Pavilion. Joslin has already lined up a job in Carle's intensive care unit. It's been a lot of work, and it's a really powerful tool to have a nursing degree, because there's some folks who get their master's degree in nursing who have the same capacity to practice as this associate's degree, Joslin said. Joslin was born and raised in Champaign-Urbana and moved to Washington State in middle school, attending the University of Washington and earning a bachelor's degree from Olympia's Evergreen State College. Joslin transitioned into construction jobs, eventually moving back to Central Illinois. In 2022, Joslin took a spring semester of prerequisites at Parkland, then stepped away for a year to help build a relative's house. They started attending the nursing program in spring 2024 and graduated Friday alongside around 50 other students. Mom wasn't the only family influence. Joslin's grandmother was a school nurse for years. She was always prepared and meticulous with her care, Joslin said. I didn't know much about her nursing career, but the generosity she showed me as a young child is definitely something that made my life better and is an inspiration to move forward. Fighting back tears, Stake emphasized the importance of health care professionals. She worked as a nurse for 30 years, 24 of those as a labor and delivery perinatal specialist. I see at least as much in Joslin as they see in me, she said. I'm so grateful for the nurses who are going to be walking and getting pinned. We need good nurses. Joslin can't wait to take the step. I'm excited about becoming a nurse because I get to meet people when it's not their best day and have a chance to make that day just a little bit easier, they said. Continuing inside the front page, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. Flipping through Thursday's News Gazette, St. Joseph's Greg Knott read with intrigue our story on a 90-year-old Korean War veteran in need of home repair. It had been 6 years since Knott last saw David Levite, whose Tilton home was damaged by snow and ice. not accompanied Levi on an honor flight in 2019. Then COVID happened, and I hadn't seen him since. Still, I just knew I had to do something, he said. Not used social media to spread Levite's story in hopes of lending a hand. The response knocked his socks off. Contributors from all walks of life chipping in so much so fast that Not had to shut down fundraising. He met Tilton contractor Larry Watson at Levite's home, the veteran greeting Not with a handshake and a jab. His hair was black then, Levite said. It's gray now. By the time Not left the house, plans were in place to fix the house. Overwhelmed by the gesture, Levite said if there's money left over, he'd like to create an account to help others in need of a lift. I'm blessed beyond words, Levite said. There are some good-hearted people out here. And in history, area history, in 1925, the death by fire of John Ellington of Newman remains a mystery. Ellington's charred and lifeless body was found alongside his automobile, 2 miles southwest of Urbana. Gasoline had been scattered around, but the automobile was undamaged. Ellington's tools were lying about, indicating he had been working on the car. The supposition is that the gasoline tank was leaking and that he attempted to investigate the trouble by the light of a match, the explosion resulting in drenching him with the flaming fluid. In 1975, the increasing number of opportunities available to women has contributed significantly to a rising crime rate among women, according to a University of Illinois sociologist. Rita Simon, professor of sociology, said, although the mass media have paid more attention to female participation in violent crimes, the real increase has been in nonviolent property crimes. In 2010, come December 22nd, Fisher will lose its one and only child care center, Sunshine Christian Preschool, a fixture in the community for 25 years, plans to close its doors, another victim of the struggling economy. In international history, today's highlight, on December 13, 2003, Saddam Hussein was captured by the U.S. forces while hiding in a hole under a farmhouse in Adwar, Iraq, near his hometown of Tikrit. On this day in 1862, Union forces led by Major General Ambrose Burnside launched failed frontal assaults against entrenched Confederate soldiers during the Civil War Battle of Fredericksburg. And in notable birthdays, actor-comedian Dick Van Dyke is 100 years old. And there's a note that says, today's quote, I fell asleep reading a dull book, and I dreamed that I was reading on, so I awoke from sheer boredom. Quote, Heinrich Heine. And from the Illinois legislature, article titled Pritzker Signs Bill Legalizing Medical Aid in Dying. This article is by John O'Connor, Springfield. Illinois residents with terminal illnesses may choose to end their lives on their own terms under a law Governor J.B. Pritzker signed on Friday. The law governing legalized medically assisted suicide won't take effect until September, in order to give the Illinois Department of Public Health and other participants time to develop, quote, stringent processes and protections, unquote, for implementing the provision, according to the Democratic Governor's Office. It is also known as Deb's Law, honoring Deb Robertson, a lifelong resident of the state living with a rare terminal illness who has pushed for the measure's approval and testified to the suffering of people and their families wanting the chance to decide for themselves how and when their lives should end. Pritzker said he has been moved by stories of patients suffering from terminal illness and their devotion to, quote, freedom and choice at the end of life in the midst of personal heartbreak, unquote. This legislation will be thoughtfully implemented so that physicians can consult patients on making deeply personal decisions with authority, autonomy, and empathy, Pritzker said after signing the measure in Chicago. 11 other states and the District of Columbia allow medically assisted suicide, according to the advocacy group Death with Dignity. Delaware was the latest, and its provision takes effect January 1. 7 other states are considering allowing it. In Illinois, the patients age 18 and older with physician-confirmed mental capacity to make medical decisions may request end-of-life medication if they have an illness that could be fatal within 6 months, as verified by 2 doctors, and have received information about all end-of-life care options, such as hospice or palliative care. Additionally, both oral and written requests for the medication must come from the patient, not a surrogate or proxy. The bill's sponsor, State Senator Linda Holmes, Democrat from Aurora, said both her parents died of cancer. I'll never forget the helpless feeling of watching them suffer when there was nothing I could do to help them, Holmes said. Every adult patient of sound mind should have this as one more option in their end-of-life care in the event their suffering becomes unbearable. The Illinois House approved the measure 6342 in late May at the end of the legislative spring session. The Senate didn't take it up until October, when it was approved 30-27 in both chambers. There were prominent Democratic no votes. The Catholic Conference of Illinois, representing the state's 6 Catholic dioceses, issued a statement disparaging Pritzker's action, saying the law puts Illinois on a dangerous and heartbreaking path. Rather than investing in real end-of-life support, such as palliative and hospice care, pain management, and family-centered accompaniment, our state has chosen to normalize killing oneself, the Catholic bishops said. This law ignores the very real failures in access to quality care that drive vulnerable people to despair. The conference also derided the idea that Illinois has legalized suicide for some while attempting to prevent it in others, particularly teenagers, among whom suicide is the second leading cause of death. That sentiment was echoed by the nonpartisan advocacy and lobbyist group Patients' Rights Action Fund. Assisted suicide plunges Illinoisans with disabilities and other vulnerable people into conversations about death instead of the care and support they deserve from their medical teams, said Matt Vallier, the group's president and CEO. Deb Robertson, the retired social worker from suburban Chicago who gave a name to the law, thanked Pritzker for signing the bill providing the full range of end-of-life options. The end for me could be near, but I'm pleased to have been able to play some role in ensuring that terminally ill Illinois residents have access to medical aid in dying. In other community news, there's an article titled Rock's Place, St. Joseph's Stalwart Reopens After Fire. It's a photograph with a caption, customers packed a remodeled Rock's Place in downtown St. Joseph as it reopened its doors about 4 months after a fire that did more than $500,000 in damage. This article is by Rob Lee Capes, St. Joseph. Nearly 4 months after a devastating fire, Rock's Place has reopened its doors in downtown St. Joseph. The reopening came just a bit too late for the business's 13th year anniversary, marked on Sunday, But owner Rocky Kane said he couldn't be any happier. "Everything turned out just the way we wanted it," he said. "What a turnaround, though. I'm kind of numb today. Just so much happening at once. But it's amazing, and I love it." Rock's place opened at 11 a.m. Friday and maintained a consistent 50 to 60 customers into the afternoon. On August 17th, a blaze that the family attributed to an electrical malfunction did more than $500,000 in damage at the well-loved restaurant. One employee was hospitalized for a few hours that day, but no one was seriously injured. The Kane family started working on restoring the building from the ground up in mid-October. It now sports a raised ceiling and new flooring. Rocky said all the chaos made him want a nap, but that excitement is keeping him going. "I had one heck of a crew, family, friends. Everybody pitched in, and it's amazing and turned out beautiful," he said. And continuing with Kathy's mailbag, among the many questions asked of multimedia reporter Kathy Reiser. The city of Urbana installed a new concrete median just east of Smith Road on Main Street in Urbana. What is its purpose? There's no doubt in my mind that vehicles will be running into it at night. The answer was, it's under construction and part of a larger project, said Urbana city engineer John Zeman. This concrete median was built as a refuge island for a pedestrian crosswalk that will connect the future Kickapoo rail trail extension on the north side of Main Street with the Biker's Lane shared use path, he said. Zeman said the Biker's Lane project started in October and the contractor completed some initial work before shutting down for the winter. Construction will resume in the spring, he said, and the concrete median itself will eventually get markings and signs that will increase its visibility. The new concrete median is located within an existing painted median, and we did not reduce the width of the driving lanes in order to build it. Next question was, what happened to Thai Fusion on Green Street? The reader who posed the question said the restaurant at 611B East Green Street had been closed for almost a month with a red imminent health hazard health placard on the window, but no other information given and no inspection report on the CU Public Health District website. Closures by the health department have been pretty well reported lately, but I can't find anything at all about this one. CU Public Health Director of Environmental Health, Sarah Michaels, told me an incident inspection based on a complaint was completed November 6th. The report would not have shown up in an online search of the department's inspection database because it was an incident inspection, not a regular periodic inspection. The restaurant was closed due to, quote, a severe pest infestation, unquote. Michael said the facility's managers did request a follow-up inspection, but there's been no status change since the mitigation was not completed as required. As of December 8th, she said, no follow-up inspection was scheduled and the eatery is still closed. That pre-funded account is available for parking in Urbana, said Champaign Police Works spokesperson Chris Kester. If you wish to pre-fund, oh, wait a minute, this is... The next question is, I saw this smaller Greyhound bus. It looked almost like a semi-truck cab with a minibus chassis. Is that the new standard for their intercity buses? Answer is, the Greyhound staff call this a cutaway or mid-size coach, and a few of them operate between Champaign and Chicago. A Greyhound spokesperson said they don't guarantee specific vehicle types assigned to any particular schedules. Equipment can vary from day to day, depending on the operating partner and what it has available. The driver of one of these cutaway buses told me They tend to operate on the Chicago to Champaign route that serves some smaller towns. The smaller, cutaway-style coaches usually do not have restrooms on board, but they make more frequent stops than the larger buses do. Two different Greyhound bus routes operate between Champaign and Chicago. The direct route, and a much more circuitous one, starting in Chicago. Buses on the longer route stop in Rockford, Rochelle, Oglesby, and Bloomington. And after the stop in Champaign, they continue on to Danville. When a customer buys a ticket for a bus leaving on a specific date and time, they can see which route that particular bus will take. The quicker, more direct route buzzes north on Interstate 57 and makes stops on the outskirts of Kankakee at the new Ricky Rockets and Chicago 95th Street, Dan Ryan, between Champaign and downtown Chicago. The scheduled travel time is a very reasonable 2 hours, 45 minutes. Amtrak can't do much better than that. At best, the scheduled travel time on the longer, more circuitous intercity bus route is 6 hours and 45 minutes between Champaign and Chicago. If you're traveling between Danville and Chicago by way of Champaign, the journey can take either 7 hours 45 minutes or 11 hours 45 minutes with a multi-hour layover in Champaign. Oh, and regarding the mystery bus stop we wrote about in the mailbag a few weeks ago, the Greyhound spokesperson, who asked that we ID him only as a spokesperson, said the company is aware that some online maps still show the Champaign intercity bus stop at a Circle K on North Mattis Avenue. He said that is an old, outdated location and that the company is working to delete it from any legacy maps that still display it. All Champaign service currently operates exclusively through the Illinois Terminal Intermodal Hub in downtown Champaign. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, December 14th, 2025. Please stay tuned.